Hey, welcome to Sentinel Watch. I'm David Brown. What are you certain about? Give it a moment. Just think that through. What do you have complete certainty of? Is there anything one can be completely certain about? You know, this isn't some idle philosophic question. We encounter this in everyday life, though we seldom spell it out or talk about it out loud, right? One of the great ironies of this era, in fact, is that many people hold so hard and fast to some beliefs and ideas with such certainty that some of us seem to have difficulty talking to people who don't think like we do. Yet, we've seen that manifest in politics and culture around the world, that many people are also fearful of what the future holds, a nagging level of uncertainty, a concern about what's ahead or what might happen if, fill in the hypothetical blank here. As spiritual seekers and learners, and hey, that's why you're listening after all, right? Chances are you are certain of this much, that reality is much more than meets the eye or any of the other physical senses. But what's the best way to deal with uncertainty? Dave Holy of Chicago has given this subject quite a bit of thought. Dave is a Christian Science teacher and practitioner. That is, he helps others with healing through a practical spiritual approach based on the Bible. And he's had many firsthand experiences that demonstrate its efficacy. Dave Holy, welcome to Sentinel Watch.
Thanks very much, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about when you first began to have certainty in your approach to spiritual healing. Was there a moment, a particular event that happened in your life?
Actually, now that you put it that way, I did have an experience when I was a little kid, and my mother told me, I was maybe 4 or 5 years old, that if I ever got into real trouble, I could reach out to God and that God would help me. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't too long after that, I had climbed up on this dresser that was in my room. I shared a room with my older brother. I climbed up on this dresser, and I threw a pillow up there, and I was going to call my brother into the room, and he would come in sort of beneath me, and from this position of advantage, I would crown him with this pillow. So that was my little plan. But I fell backwards off this dresser, and I thought, you know, midair, falling backwards was very disconcerting, and I realized, you know, my mom told me that I could reach out to God, and this might be that moment. And so I did. I said, God, you got to help me here. And an idea came to me while I was falling to interlock my fingers and put my hands behind my head. And as I did that, my hands came into contact with a doorknob that was there, a closet door, and I caught it in my hands, and my feet came down flat on the floor, and the whole thing was over at that point. And I realized, you know, that happened midair in a moment simply by reaching into the divine, like my mom told me I could do. And so I think that, you know, when you ask what started it, it probably was that. And then from there, I've had, you know, many other experiences. You know, Dave, this idea of uncertainty, and today we may be in maybe not the most uncertain times that we've ever had on the face of the earth, but there's a lot that seems very uncertain.
Right.
You know, people are wondering about the whole democratic election process and so forth, and the economics and climate and all the rest of that. So, you know, you asked, what can you be certain of?
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you can be certain of is a lot greater than those things that are so uncertain. Did you ever see, Dave, the movie Hoosiers?
Yeah, sure. I love it.
Yeah. Do you remember when those guys got to the big game and they were intimidated by that arena they were going to be playing in?
Yeah.
Because they were used to playing in little gyms.
Right.
And Gene Hackman said, measure the distance from the rim to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, what is it? He says, 10 feet. So he asked, what's the dimension of ours at home? And they said, it's the same. And the point of the whole exercise was, do not be intimidated by this arena. We don't need to be intimidated by this changing arena of circumstances around us, because 2 + 2 = 4. We're playing on the same court. One of the things that I've been exposed to as a Christian Scientist is this idea of what is God, and is that certain? And God is defined in Christian Science as truth, as love. as principle, things that don't change, mm-hmm. things that are like eternally consistent.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I love about that then is, what is the most truthful or honest thing I can do right now in this changing situation? Or what is the most loving thing that I can do? Or what is the most principled thing?
Hmm.
And it gives you a filter through which to kind of guide yourself or measure the options before you. And I have found that to be pretty helpful.
You get past a lot of the noise, right? I mean, you get past a lot of the suggestions that you're getting from, well, from fear itself, from the physical senses. You're honing in on really ideas, it sounds like.
Well, yeah, and that's a good way to put it. It's noise, it's suggestion. Somebody just today told me that the word suggestion, which is in Christian Science, there's a phrase, aggressive mental suggestion, and we get a lot of those every day. It's a suggestion of something that isn't true that wants us to consider it true. And somebody today looked in a dictionary, and that word suggestion is associated with the word gimmick, which is kind of a flashy something to get your attention and attract you. And we want to be resistant to that kind of attraction. So it's beyond the razzle-dazzle. And it's beyond the fear. It's certainly beyond fear. And it's certainly beyond anger. You've got a lot of people who are kind of responding or reacting, you might say, to, like you use the phrase fake news or, mm-hmm. or you know, bad information, and they act on that. Whereas if you do filter that out and say, is that true? And then let that be a basis for your actions. Or is that loving? Or is that principled?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it just enables you to kind of simplify. Like you say, you don't get sucked into all the noise.
You know, Dave, before we go much further, I want to hone in on that word that you used that people feel differently about, that word God. To some people, I think, at least in a lot of traditions, it's God is perceived as anthropomorphic somehow, sort of like a superhuman, if you will. Some people see God as a Jesus personified or a spiritual version of Jesus or something like that. And a lot of people just associate God with church and religion. I want to drill down on what you were describing, though, because you were turning to God when you were a little kid, and obviously you continue to in your practice of Christian Science. Even if you have issues around that word, God, what are you describing, really? What is God? I mean, I know that's a huge question, but what are you certain of when it comes to God?
Well, the way I see the concept of God that is love, I understand love, and I've seen it, and you see it every day. I understand intelligence. I understand what a principle is. Principle doesn't move. It doesn't matter who's involved. That's a principle. Now, this idea of it being impersonal in nature doesn't mean unloving, because God is love too. So in Christian Science, there's seven actual synonyms for God that you learn.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Principle, mind. You know, mind is intelligence. A mind is necessary every single day, every single moment. And there's nothing more close to us than our own thought. And if that's a divine idea coming from God, like a little kid falling midair, reaching into that divine intelligence and getting an answer, an actionable
right.
answer
right.
In less than a second, that's a divine presence. So principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, and love. So there are these seven synonyms. So it's beyond any personal sense of what I as a human might superimpose as a great big any human representation of God is beyond anything like that. It's totally principled.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's fascinating to me is that those synonyms that you describe all deal with intangibles to the human sense, and yet things that we all experience that are, we all would recognize them as totally real, even though they don't have a physical manifestation per se always.
Yes.
We understand them as permanent
yes.
fixtures of who we are and what it means to be alive. And if there's anything that's central to the idea of certainty, it's something that is permanent, that cannot be destroyed through any act, no matter what.
Yeah.
That seems like a terrific rock upon which you're basing your sense of certainty. But what about those uncertainties that we all do feel? You're saying that we should try to run the arguments for those uncertainties past this filter that you're describing?
Yeah, I think so, because there are things that really don't change. I was thinking, for instance, the Bible is full of examples. There was this guy, Elijah, who God told him to go to live by this little brook, the brook Cherith, and the brook dried up. So he lived there. He went and he was obedient and he did it, but the brook dried up. And then God said, go to Zarephath, and there's a widow woman there who's going to sustain you. She's been prepared to sustain you. So he went to Zarephath. But when he got to Zarephath, this woman had very little. She was putting together her last meal, actually. And, you know, Elijah could have said, ooh, there's been a mistake here. Look at this. This woman's not ready to sustain me. She can't even sustain herself. But he didn't do that. He said, I'm going to trust this. And he said, sure, go ahead. Make your last meal, but make me a little cake while you're at it. And they lived for many, many days, it says in the Bible. And the point of that story is that when you trust God, not only are you cared for, everyone around you is cared for. And this woman and her family and this guy, Elijah, lived for many days on what she considered her final meal. So there are many examples where the human situation seems completely hopeless, but the spiritual, the superhuman or above human situation is completely consistent and completely cared for. Bible's full of those.
I want to ask you about how you draw your inspiration from some of those stories in a practical sense, because I'm sure you get calls from people asking for your spiritual assistance. You're a practitioner, and I was talking about how you help others with healing using that practical spiritual approach. Someone calls, well, maybe you could give us an example of how you have dealt with a problem in the past, or maybe you have an experience that you could share that might show us how you're applying these biblical principles.
Yeah, okay. A guy called me up and he'd been indicted for a white-collar crime. He and three others worked for a bank, and it was after 2008, the whole financial crisis and
meltdown,
so forth.
Yeah.
And so he called me and he said, I've got to defend myself against this criminal indictment. And it was, multiple tens of thousands in fines and a long jail sentence, what he was looking at. But they offered him a plea deal where if he pleaded guilty, there would be no jail time and no fine. He couldn't work in the banking industry anymore, but essentially it was, so it was a good deal. And he asked me what I thought about it. And my question to him was, are you guilty? Because if you're guilty, then it sounds like a great deal. If you're not guilty, then you're going to base a legal argument on something that isn't true. So he said, no, I think I really am not guilty. And what he ended up doing was he rejected the plea arrangement. The three other people with him did accept it, but he rejected it. And he told me that when he went to trial, he defended himself, and every point that was made in the indictment against him, he was listening to it as they were bringing it forward, as they were prosecuting it, and he made notes on every point they made, and he used every single one of their points to defend himself. And he was exonerated, completely. And, he can work wherever he wants, and there was no fine, there was no anything. So the point is, it seems like he should have grabbed the deal.
Yeah.
Even though there was no truth associated with it. And that's not a safe place to be. You want to be where the truth is, because truth is God. So that's kind of one example. I'm sure I could give you 50 if we took the time.
Could you say a little bit more, though, about the spiritual connection there? You said he decided to lean on truth.
Yes.
And in large part because there was a certain degree of certainty there.
Yes.
That truth is God. And that was bigger than whatever the evidence was to material sense.
Yeah. Truth is God, and God has all the power. Now, from a mortal point of view, from a human point of view, it looks like we are in a human situation where there is a lot of false power. And what we've got to know is that that false power really has no authority. And we need to kind of prove that and not sort of buckle under that pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, to his credit, he just said, I'm really not guilty. So really, probably all I really did for him was ask him to consider, where is truth in this? Because truth has the power. And if you want to stay with truth, which is where I think it's the safest, then you're going to do that. And that's what he decided to do. And it ended up to his tremendous advantage. And
sounds like it. Yeah.
Not just professionally, but sort of as an individual, you know, kind of you learn to trust God. By the way, I moved in 2010. You know, I kind of quit what I was doing. I didn't really want to do it, but it occurred to me that I should do it. And mm-hmm. I thought, well, I'm going to just trust this. The Bible says, Jesus said it, in my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. And I thought, okay, I'm going to trust that. And I'm going to assume that I'm going to be okay. I'm going to go to this new location. I'm going to sell this beautiful home that I had, that I loved. And I'm going to go to this new location and just see. So I kind of trusted it. It seemed like the right thing to do. And it has turned out to be nothing but a blessing, really, not just for me.
You know, I'm a student of Christian Science myself, Dave. And something that I think that a lot of us have experienced, we what you're describing there is a fantastic demonstration of what it means to be certain in the power of God, to have that clarity of thought. But I can remember one, you know, you're talking about when you were a kid. I can remember being a teenager and trying to talk about Christian Science with some of my friends, and somebody gave me the big question. But you would go see a doctor if you broke your arm, wouldn't you? One of those. And to be honest, it planted a certain seed of uncertainty. And I bet you've encountered this as well.
Yeah.
That when you're dealing with a physical problem, that, well, you're not sure, really, because there doesn't seem to be any connection between the spiritual and material realms, frankly. How do you address that?
Well, it's interesting because I was speaking with a young woman just a few days ago, and she was dealing with a certain issue. And I happened to know a little bit about her childhood because her mother had told me that she broke her arm. You talk about a broken arm. This little girl broke her arm, and it was like sticking out sideways. So it was very, very visible. And the mother said, you know, we're going to have that set. And the little girl said, no, this is going to be under God's care. So this is a little tiny kid, and it was healed. It was adjusted. The little girl had this trust that there was a remedial agency in the universe that could make the correction. And I actually reminded her of this recently because she's now a young adult. And I said, aren't you the little girl that had the arm? She said, yeah. And I said, well, you know, that same truth that was true then is true now for you. So I think we do have to be reminded of it. And we do have the tendency to pick up the false claims and the false sort of realities. There's a guy, Ray Chandler. I don't know if you know him. He's like a crime novelist.
Oh, yeah, sure. Raymond Chandler. Absolutely.
Raymond Chandler. Well, he wrote this line that I like, which is, down these mean streets a man must go who is not himself mean, who is neither tarnished nor afraid. And my take on that is, you know, down these human pathways, we all must go, which is, you know, school and home and marriage and family and government and all of the rest of that. Down these human pathways, a man must go who is not himself mortal, who is neither tarnished by mortality nor afraid of it. And this, to me, is the connection between the divine and the human. And
wow.
And we can experience that complete coincidence of the human and the divine in our own lives.
You know where I've found that, I don't know about you, Dave, but where I've often found that is in what Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, we're talking about seven synonyms that she distilled for God. And I think of soul or consciousness as making such a wonderful illustration of that sort of spiritual connection. You know, when we think about what it means to be conscious, that is divine. You know, that consciousness is. There's a certitude of one's own being that's beyond many things, but that being is fundamentally spiritual. That takes it to another entire level. Is there a synonym that you sort of plug into quite often when you're making that connection with the divine?
Well, I love the one you just described, and I would put mind right in there with that. You know, in the Bible, there's this whole story of Moses having a conversation with God. And when Moses was having his conversations with God and getting his initial instructions from God, he said, you know, people are going to want to know who I've been talking to, and I'm going to need to know your name. So what is your name? And God said, my name is I Am, and that's going to be my name forever. And so every time you use that phrase, or I do, that's the expression of soul. We don't have our own soul. It's the expression of soul. We each one of us has a unique individual expression, but it's all the expression of God. You know, some people say, God is my co-pilot. I would say, God is a pilot, and it's my hands on the stick. So it's God doing whatever it is that God needs to have done, and I'm a participant in this. I'm kind of part of the mechanism of it all. I'm kind of the expression of it all.
You know, I happen to know, Dave, that you ride motorcycles, and so do I. And I think that I bet you've had a similar experience where you get on that bike and you're making that connection as you head out, you know?
It's a great feeling. It's a great feeling, actually.
It's fantastic. One of the reasons I mentioned that is because there's many would consider there to be a great deal of uncertainty when you're out there on two wheels. But you can ground yourself right at the beginning of that ride in that sort of spiritual certainty that you have all you need and that all is well. And you can ground it. Again, I say that certainty, but there's so much else in the world, way beyond motorcycles, of course, where we're getting information and we're trying to deal with the world today. And I guess I wonder how we can tap in to a sense of trust that all is well.
You know, that phrase, I'm glad you mentioned the bike too, because riding is an inherently dangerous thing if you're going to look at it from a mortal point of view. But from a divine point of view, you're as safe there as you will be anywhere. I got an email today with a little quote from a woman named Julian of Norwich, who lived 700 years ago in England. And it's, all shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. Now, the idea there is she saw something. She was in the middle of a pandemic, the Great Plague. She was in the middle of the Hundred Years' War. So there was a great deal of uncertainty for her too. But she glimpsed that this force of love operating in the universe, and Mary Baker Eddy, a couple hundred years ago, saw something similar. I think she used that phrase 26 times. I think she used the phrase, the divine principle, comma, love. So what she was suggesting or what she was experiencing and writing about is this principle that's in operation wherever we will ever be, and we are protected by it. It is upholding us, and we can kind of just rest easy in that. It kind of takes all the uncertainty out of it. And by the way, uncertainty leads to fear. And love, which is a synonym for God, Bible says it casts out fear. So God, love, eliminates fear and brings confidence. It brings certainty into our experience. We don't want to fear. We don't want to hate. We don't want to be angry. We don't want to be limited. We want to have these full, robust, useful, harmless, helpful lives. And those are possible. And I have found by kind of just like we said, you know, use the filter of those synonyms to filter, am I going to believe this? Is it true? Is it loving? Is it principled? Is it intelligent? And if so, then okay, I'm going to go with it. If it isn't, or if it isn't any one of those. A lot of people might say, well, I would be honest, but it wouldn't be loving. But that's a mistake, because love is truth. Those are synonyms. They go together. So it's a unified approach. It's a very safe approach. It's a very fulfilling and rewarding approach. And it's one that can benefit a lot of people.
You know, it's an approach that's based in the Bible. And there is a wonderful explication of some of the lessons from the Bible in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. We've referred to that book a couple of times, and especially to those synonyms, and tried to dig a little bit deeper, but we'd encourage you to check it out for sure. We've been talking with Dave Holy of Chicago. He is a Christian Science teacher and practitioner. Thanks so much for taking time to share with us how you find certainty in what so many people feel like are uncertain times. This was really helpful.
Thank you, Dave. I've enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Sentinel Watch. I'm David Brown.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Publishing Society. Copyright 2022.